what it's about, the middle way. All life is dukkha, which most of you understand. Birth, death, sickness, old age, transience, impermanence, unsatisfactory experience, kind of a personal orientation to all of that, desire and craving, aversion, attachment, delusion. Dukkha, we'll talk a little bit more, is a recent translation, or one that I saw recently in Buddha Dharma, is misalignment. So, not the right direction, particularly. And misalignment is in the present. The past is actualization, actual, what happened. The future is yet. So there's also, Buddha taught, in addition to the Noble Truths and Eightfold Paths, which we'll skip over, and attention and mindfulness and no self. Koban once said something like, I feel nothing belongs to me, no abiding self. Also talked about the hindrances, I think. I'm not sure if the paramitas came later or with the initial teachings, but they come in many versions. Wei Nang had a different version. He was the first patriarch in China, and I love those, so I'll read them briefly. The commandment, it is innate within you that you do not wish to kill, steal, etc. Tranquility, you do not wish to lead a life, a bustling life, or to make money. Wisdom, you do not wish to live in delusion. Emancipation, you do not wish to suffer the pangs of consciousness, and you wish to live a life of sanction. Teaching, you know how you were emancipated, so you will teach it. This is the hardest. Something from Koban that I noted was just a statement that we trust in the sincerity of each of us, basically, each student. So the Song of the Six Perfections from Milarepa, again, are my idea of a easy way to understand the incredible, hundreds of thousands of volumes of Buddhist teachings, perhaps. And they are, for generosity, nothing to do other than stop fixating on self. For morality, nothing to do other than stop being dishonest. For patience, nothing to do other than not fear what is ultimately true. For effort, nothing to do other than practice continuously. For meditative stability, nothing to do other than rest in presence. For wisdom, nothing to do other than know directly how things are. So that's a lot. It actually encompasses a lot, just compared to the precepts, for example. I have 16 precepts and 3 versions that I'm sort of responsible for, and many alternative traditions of precepts. So they get very, very complicated. So that song, very, very simple and direct and immediate in terms of my key question is, what do I do? So they tell me what to do, nothing to do except few sanctions. And for generosity, nothing to do other than stop fixating on self. Of course, Buddha's teaching was no self, no abiding self, no ego, and in, I think, Reb Anderson's terms, no container, no controller, no owner of experience. Whereas the self, the ego, and the I, at least in my mind, are somewhat confused. In most people's minds, and also, and certainly in my mind. It gets into... it's independent of neuroses, I think, in some sense. And thinking in terms of fear, worry, doubt, self-hatred, and self-condemnation, or alternatively, narcissism, where you're excessively me, 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 it's all about me. Neurotic interpretations of generosity and how to be generous were presented in prior talks here. The Verculean, if I'm pronouncing that word correctly, talked about a Buddhism that they had augmented with their particular ideas of how to address what they called individual conditioning or conditions, states of conditioning. And I think they're universal, at least in their teaching, in their books. There are several books in the Jikoji's library by them that talk about their particular therapy and approach to it as a component of Buddhism. And I've been recently listening to Pema Chodron also. Well, Jim Hutt also, the Verculeans describe their therapy as an introspective version of addressing the conditioned states. But Jim Hutt also talked here, and he's a well-known therapist in Menlo Park. He talked about the opposite, the extroverted version and the relationship therapy, and both of those are posted, so you can always go back and listen to them if you want. The point is that in Pema Chodron's teaching particularly, the key to these are kindness. And it's not only kindness to others, it's kindness to self. But it's independent for generosity, nothing to do but stop fixating on self. Tenderness, intimacy, self-acceptance. And as opposed to, at least in my case, habitual thinking and discursive thinking and afflictive emotions, and one or the other is a bit unconscious, so I may be thinking and being driven by emotions. I may be thinking something is wrong, I have to cure it, or I blame somebody, or all those problems. The key to all those, key to relation to other people, is kindness, self-acceptance, in Koban's terms. In Pima's terms, two remedies. One is to, if you're sort of drifting or uncomfortable, either in emotions or thought, not present, then to pause, breathe, reflect a bit, and then just return. She also talks a lot about storylines that we have, that are movies in our head that we're playing. And she says the problem is not with the movie itself, it's with the projector, whatever's driving it. But there again, the remedy is to pause, break it up a little bit. Nothing to do but stop fixating on self. For morality, nothing to do other than stop being dishonest. That, to me, completely encompasses the precepts, and I love it. It's a nice, simple statement. And I can see that definitely in myself. Everything that I try to do is, you know, somewhat to be honest or to approach that. But dualism is part of that, and you have the split between the oneness and comparative understanding, intellectual and thinking understanding. For patience, nothing to do other than fear, not fear what is ultimately true. Two parts of that. Michael, I think, used the term aswara. Is that right? Aswara as patience. Asarwa.
No, it's kshanti. Kshanti.
Oh. Okay.
Asarava.
I have the actual ones here, but the patience is a little bit, I think, not as encompassing as in other versions. I see patience, tolerance, forbearance, acceptance, endurance, and I infer, but I'm not sure it's right, to some degree, surrender. But what is ultimately true is a puzzle to me. I think the past is ultimately true, and the present is a bit of a mystery. The future is the future. So maybe you understand it better than I do, but for patience, nothing to do other than not fear what is ultimately true. For effort, nothing to do other than practice continuously. The practice continuously is reflected in many, many other sutras, many other teachings. One of which comes to mind is the Anapanasati Sutra, where the line is something like, continuous practice brings clear knowing and release in their culmination. The Buddha, as I remember the sutra, basically just said, if you practice these factors, basically mindfulness and six others, investigation of Dharma, energy, joy, concentration, ease maybe, and equanimity. Practicing those seven factors of awakening continuously leads to the culmination of liberation. That's continuous practice that was key to me. And from Hui Nang, a very general statement, at all times, in every moment of your mind, you must, etc., basically purify your mind by your own effort, see your own teachings by your own practice, see your own Buddha by your own exercise, reform yourself by observing your own commandments. So for effort or zeal or steadfastness, nothing to do other than practice continuously. For meditative stability, nothing to do other than rest in presence. So there you go. How to do zazen. Tilopa's six words of advice also come to mind in that context. The six words were started prefaced by don't. And the six words were recall, imagine, think, examine, control. Instead, relax. Rest. In more detail, those are let go of what is past. Let go of the future. Let go of the present. Don't try to figure anything out. Don't try to make anything happen. Just relax and rest right now. For wisdom, the final one, nothing to do other than know directly how things are. So those are six of the paramitas, the perfections. The perfections as alluded to in Buddha's statement in the Mindfulness Sutra, which, if practiced, leads to perfection. There are four others that are added in another Dasabhumika Sutra. One is skillful means, another is vow, resolution, aspiration, determination. Spiritual power and knowledge. How these perfections relate to Dogen's poem that I read during the second period of Zazen. In my mind, are that the paramitas, as the song of the six perfections, and each one of them sort of informs a lot of those couplets within the song and gives you some idea of what to do when you realize that you're not sitting but thinking, not paying attention. Do the present, not resting in present. Other aspects of Zazen. Suwaki's Zazen is the self, sitting itself. It's not something that we do. Kogan's, one must disappear on the cushion. It is the only way. And Suzuki's Bodhisattva's one way. Just practice, don't look at the tracks, which is somewhat alludes to the problem that I, you know, the caveats, questions of these words lie. I won't try to read the poem again unless you or someone wants me to, but I will go through it sort of pair of lines by pair of lines, fairly briefly. Yes, Judy.
Why don't you read it again? That was nice.
Okay. I'll be happy to. The hub of Buddha's activity, the turning of the ancestor's hub, it moves along with your non-thinking and is completed in the realm of non-merging. As it moves along with your non-thinking, its appearance is immediate. As it is completed in the realm of non-merging, completeness itself is realization. If its appearance is immediate, you have no defilement. When completeness is realization, you stay in neither the general nor the particular. Immediacy is dropping away with no. If you have immediacy without defilement, immediacy is dropping away with no obstacles. Realization, neither general nor particular, is effort without desire. Clear water all the way to the bottom. A fish swims like a fish. Vast sky, transparent throughout. A bird flies like a bird. I know. I'm sorry, I'm taking too long in this, but The hub of the Buddha's activity, the turning of ancestors' hub, suggests the Dharma wheel or the teaching wheel. It also suggests the translation of dukkha as misalignment, misaligned axle. That was in Buddha Dharma. A misdirection might be the dukkha. Turning itself is the turning of the ancestors' hub. It moves along with your non-thinking and is completed in the realm of non-merging. The it in it moves, I think you can compare to the it in many other poems and teachings. As in the jewel mirror samadhis, you are not it, it is you. Or just this is it, or many others.
Excuse me. What was you are not it, it is you?
Yeah.
Where did this come from?
The jewel mirror samadhi poem. You can find it easily on the Google.
We have copies here. Yes.
Non-thinking is, there was a koan on that I won't go over again, but it's basically two monks discussing. One monk asking the other monk who is sitting in Zazen, what is he doing? He said, or what is he thinking? The monk said, not thinking. The standing monk said, how do you think, not thinking? The first sitting monk said, non-thinking. Very famous koan. But you can compare that with my discursive thinking and consequent unconscious emotions, or the converse, whichever happens to be most relevant. Non-merging is a kind of an interesting statement. And in one translation, it's translated as non-emerging. This was on the web, rather than non-merging, which seems to me quite different. It's completed in the realm of non-merging. And Val suggested that it has the same sense as non in many Buddhist teachings, a sense of emptiness, basically. So non-merging, it's completed in the realm of emptiness, was the understanding, and something that we can't attach to, maybe. As it moves along with your non-thinking, its appearance is immediate. Appearance is something to reflect on, and so is immediate. And I'll leave that with you, how it appears and what the immediacy is. As it is completed in the realm of non-merging, completeness itself is realization. If its appearance is immediate, you have no defilement. No misalignment, maybe. No dukkha. No separation. When completeness is realization, you stay in neither the general nor the particular. The general emptiness, big mind, the foundations of mindfulness, maybe. Koban's "one must disappear in the sitting" suggests that in the staying, in neither, you stay in neither the general nor the particular, there is not a separate you. If you have immediacy without defilement, immediacy is dropping away with no obstacles. Consider Dogen's dropping away body and mind is his description of his enlightenment experience. Realization, neither general nor particular, is effort without desire. To me, that goes back to the correct alignment, effort without desire. The three marks of Buddhism also had this desirelessness as one of them. The other two were emptiness and notionlessness. Clear water all the way to the bottom, a fish swims like a fish. Vast sky transparent throughout, a bird flies like a bird. So, I have some more, but I don't think I'll go through it. There's a long quote from Koban that might be sort of a good conclusion. A lot of my thinking when I went through this poem, and I read too quickly through the couplets, but they're frequently realizing not only am I thinking, but I've been thinking for the last 5 minutes and I've been going off on a tangent. I'm not really present. The tendency is to be there, straighten up, etc. And it's not so easy because there's other factors involved. But that tendency of punishing is what kindness has to be brought to. Or the tendency just to forgive it, maybe the converse, a little bit of patience and honesty about what is and who you are within it. So Koban's statement, which I loved, was actually the last thing that Carolyn Atkinson heard from Koban, and I think I've sent this to some of you. And she devoted a whole book of it, and it was sort of the focus of her book, and also being the last thing that she heard from Koban, it was the most memorable thing that she found and worthy of this book. The book itself is A Light in the Mind. It's available downtown. She described it, you know, as someone having asked him again why we sit, since everything is enlightenment to begin with and we're all Buddhas. He said very, very slowly, and over a period of about 5 or 10 minutes, he sort of one sentence after the other with deep reflections in between, but I'll read it very quickly. Koban replied, "We sit to make life meaningful. The significance of our life is not experienced in striving to create some perfect thing. We must simply start with accepting ourselves. Sitting brings us back to actually who and where we are. This can be very painful. Self-acceptance is the hardest thing to do. If we can't accept ourselves, we are living in ignorance this darkest night. We may still be awake, but we don't know where we are. We cannot see. The mind has no light. Practice is this candle in our very darkest hour, very darkest room." Discussion or questions or?
I'm not sure. Earlier, did you say your words were that life is suffering? Is that what I heard early on? The definition of dukkha?
No, that's the common definition, though. So you're right on.
I thought, okay. Could you repeat your statement?
Oh, dukkha is misalignment. It's sort of going in the wrong direction, or it's actually not wrong, it's incorrect in a sense. And the translation, as I understand it, is somewhat relevant to the turning of an axle within a hub. So you can envision that, the hub grinding into the axle on one side and creating sound and heat and shavings or something like that, and getting gradually worse and worse. But,
yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Everyone always wants to know why sit, right? So I just heard someone actually answer that question. So we sit to make life meaningful. Well, I'm just curious if you have any more elaboration on that particular statement, or why do we sit, or anything else.
That's a very famous question in many, many Zen traditions. One that I like, that was Dan, I've forgotten his last name at the moment, or I'm blocking his last name. Anyway.
Dan Sigmund.
Yeah, thank you. During a Shuso ceremony, was nothing better to do. And you can take that in two senses. One is, there is nothing better to do. And we don't really have anything better to do. We sit when we don't have anything better to do.
Can you, for the benefit of the group, can you read Colvin's statement again? If this last, then we'll probably break for lunch, I guess.
The whole thing?
Yeah. Please.
We sit to make life meaningful. The significance of our life is not experienced in sitting to create some perfect thing. We're not striving for perfection. That was my... I'm sorry, I shouldn't have interjected that. We must simply start with accepting ourselves. Sitting brings us back to actually who and where we are. This can be very painful. Self-acceptance is the hardest thing to do. If we can't accept ourselves, we are living in ignorance, this darkest night. We may still be awake, but we don't know where we are. We cannot see. The mind has no light. Practice is this candle in our very darkest room.
Thank you.